You are listening to End of Life University Podcast, Real Talk About Life and Death. This is episode number 140. Welcome to End of Life University Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator. In this podcast, I share thoughtful conversations with experts in various fields related to dying and death, and informative teaching sessions on preparing for the end of life by living fully today. I want to thank you so much for joining me again here for another episode of the podcast. And I'm excited today I'll be sharing with you an interview with Rachel Stevenson, who talks about her own experience with the death of her mother when she was 5 years old, and a TED Talk she recorded called Against Grieving and Silence. And we're going to discuss how grief should be handled with very young children when a parent dies and the consequences of not dealing with grief and helping children with their grief through Rachel's memories and her perspective. So that's a very interesting conversation that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. Before we get there, just a couple of announcements again. A Year of Reading Dangerously online reading group is still going on for the whole year of 2018, and you can join at any time. We're just finishing up reading Grace and Grit by Ken Wilber here at the end of April, which is when this podcast will be broadcast initially. And for the month of May 2018, we'll be reading A Sacred Dying by Megory Anderson. So you can join in our group if you're interested. If you'd like to read with us, go to eoluniversity.com/year of reading with no punctuation, no capitalization, just all one word, no spaces. And you'll be able to see all of the books, all the books we've already read, and you can listen to our audio conversations about those books. And you can see ahead for the rest of the year the books that are coming up that we're going to be reading this year. So you can also, on that page, you can sign up to receive an email notification about each new book as it comes out every month. It will also include a reader's discussion guide, provided the author has made one available, and information about our conversation at the end of the month about the book, our book discussion. So far, we've had all but one author who has been able to come to the discussion, and I think we'll have several more authors the rest of this year who will be joining us for our discussions. And so that'll be a lot of fun. So come along and join us if you're interested. Another announcement, let's see. We just finished the Smart Decisions Challenge, which has been going on all of April, because April is when National Healthcare Decisions Day comes. So I reinvigorated the Smart Decisions Challenge, a 10-day challenge to get advanced directives met. And here's what happened. I found out from some people that 10 days isn't nearly enough time. People felt like, oh, I'm too rushed. I don't have time to answer all these questions and do this. So it's my encouragement, if for anyone who decided to sign up for that 10-day challenge, it's okay if it becomes a 30-day challenge or a one-year challenge and it takes time to work on it. Just get started. Just start thinking about it right now and start gathering your paperwork and start getting ready for this whole process. Also, another thing that just finished that went on during the month of April was a four-part webinar series called Demystifying Palliative Care, where I interviewed the four members of the palliative care team, the physician, nurse, social worker, and chaplain, about the roles they play on the palliative care team. And it was very enlightening and very interesting, even for me. And I feel like I often feel like I know a lot about what palliative care is, but it was really gratifying to speak with these team members about their role and how they work together on a team. And I think it could be very useful if you feel like you'd like to know more about palliative care, what it is and what it offers and how it differs from hospice. This webinar series is a great way to get educated. So if you want to listen in to all of those recordings, they're posted at eoluniversity.com/palliative, P-A-L-L-I-A-T-I-V-E. And I'll put all of these links I'm mentioning on the show notes for this episode too. So if you don't pick them up while you're listening here, you can go to eolupodcast.com and look for episode number 140, and all the links will be there in the show notes for you. Today, the podcast is being sponsored by the Healing Chance album by Gia, which is an album of chants. Gia happens to be my daughter, but she made this amazing album of healing chants, and they are chants that she recorded. Half of them are with a crystal singing bowl that she sings chants over the beautiful music of the singing bowl, and the other half are recorded with a harmonium, which is an instrument like a bellows instrument with a keyboard, almost like an accordion, that she played in the background. She has other musicians, a drummer and a guitarist on some of the songs. And she records as many as eight part harmony in some of the songs, which is incredible. And you can hear her angelic voice. The chants are beautiful, very soothing, and very healing to listen to. And already I've gotten, and so has she, a lot of feedback from people who say that they're using the chants and listening every day to help them relax. But also some people who are working on healing are listening to the chants as part of their practice each day, their meditation and practice to help them get into a state of rejuvenation and healing. So the podcast is being sponsored by that album today, and I'll put a link in the show notes at eolupodcast.com. You can connect to it. I'm also going to end the podcast today by playing one of the songs called Evocation from the album. And so wait till the very, very end. Instead of my usual outro music, I'll play this chant so you can hear it and get a little sample of what it sounds like, but you have to stay tuned until the very end in order to hear that one. So, let's see, anything else I need to tell you about? I should let you know that, this month I just released a hospice happy hour recording for my Patreon supporters, which is one of the bonuses for people who decide to contribute on Patreon. And so that's available for any of you who are Patreon supporters. If you're interested in supporting this podcast for as little as $1 per month, you can go to Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/EOLU, and you will be able to read about becoming a supporter and sign up there if you'd like to make a monthly donation to keep the podcast on the air and also the End of Life University interview series. So, with all of that said, we'll move on to our interview today. And again, this is with Rachel Stevenson. And if you come back after the interview, keep listening. I'll come back on and share with you some of my takeaways from our interview. So I hope you enjoy my talk with Rachel Stevenson. Here we go. Rachel is an educator, administrator, and writer. For the past 7 years, she has worked for the City University of New York, designing and implementing innovative, high-performing programs focused on civic engagement, workforce development, and youth development for a range of inspiring CUNY students. Rachel holds a Master of Fine Arts degree in nonfiction writing from Columbia University School of the Arts. And though she has not spent her career in the world of grief and bereavement, Rachel has spent her life thinking about her own grief and knowing that she would one day revisit her own story to connect with others about navigating loss, which will be the subject for our discussion today. Rachel is the author of the blog Dear Dead Mother on WordPress.com, and she recently did a TEDx talk called Against Grieving in Silence, which you can watch on YouTube. So, Rachel, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, to begin with, Rachel, I'd love for you to just share your story for those who haven't watched the TEDx video, just to hear about your own experience with loss.
Definitely, I'm happy to. I decided before doing that TEDx talk that it was a great opportunity for me. I had a great opportunity to talk about grief because my loss story is about two particular losses, my mom and my dad. I lost my mom when I was 5. She was killed in a car accident. And the thing that is most notable, I think, I mean, aside from the fact that this very, traumatic and life-defining thing happened to me at such a young age, is the fact that my family's reaction to her death was to keep things quiet and not really talk about what had happened. And I know in retrospect that they made those decisions. I mean, this was in the, early 80s, and, grief and death, I mean, culturally, I think people weren't particularly comfortable talking about it and really acknowledging it. And so, the instinctual response that my family had was to put away, symbols of my mom and our life with her and just move forward. Now, the reason I link the story of my mom's death with my dad's is because he died just over 30 years after she did, and I am convinced that part of the reason he went down the road he did, which led him to alcohol abuse and substance abuse, and that's what eventually killed him, I strongly believe that happened because he did not fully acknowledge his grief out loud. I mean, I can't speak to what he did privately because I was never really let into his most private moments, but I know that he and I never really connected in the way that I desperately wanted to as I got older and had lots of questions and wanted to understand who my mother was and, fill this void that was in my life. And, time and time again, when I reached out in different ways to try to get information or make a connection, the barriers went up. And I know that it was incredibly painful for my father and other members of my family. And in the end, he and others were not able to completely, overcome the barriers and get past the pain in order to talk to me. And so, now as I look back on all of this, my dad died just a few years ago, I'm really starting to reflect more about how these stories are so connected. And, I've said that my dad started down that road of self-destruction, the night my mom died because of the choices he ended up making around how to grieve or how not to grieve and, how he and I could or could not be partners in that grief journey. So, I'm really interested in talking about that, sharing this story really in order to open up conversations with others about the importance of talking, truthfully to children about death and not softening the truth or trying to, pretend that things didn't happen when they did, because, it has implications. It definitely has implications mm-hmm. for the future,
Absolutely. And so you were 5 years old when your mother died, and from the video I gathered that your grandmother and your father didn't really tell you how she died or any of the details. You were told she's in heaven now, basically.
That's right. I mean, the language that they used was vague, you know, a lot of euphemisms that we often hear associated with death. And, I mean, it was a very sudden thing that happened. You know, it was this car accident. My dad and my mother and a couple of friends were on their way home from, you know, a party they'd been to, and they were hit by another car. Of course, this is all information I've discovered over the years. You know, I did not have this immediately. And so when my grandmother was called from the hospital in the middle of the night, I was at her home. You know, she was watching me while my parents were out. She did wake me up to say that she was leaving, and all she said to me was that she said, "Your mommy's sick." And I'm sure in the moment she was completely overwhelmed and afraid, and you know, that's all she could muster, really. "Your mommy's sick." But I had no idea what that meant. And so, you know, I was five. I had just turned five a few days before. And so in my mind, I started to turn over images of my mom in a sick bed, you know, like with a thermometer in her mouth. And like, does she have a fever? And is she shivering? Is she cold? You know, I just imagined that kind of sickness. And then the next morning when my grandmother came home with my dad, you know, without my mother, what I was immediately told by my father was that your mommy's in heaven now. She's with the angels. And that's all that was said. So, you know, I put together information I'd heard the night before. She's sick with mommy's in heaven. And for me, even though I was really young, I understood that that was a very permanent thing, that I was never going to see her again. I mean, I remember at my core just this sense of finality when he said that. I just knew, I would never see her again. But for years, because I had heard "your mommy's sick," you know, I just imagined that she was in a bed somewhere and had a fever, and you know, no one ever explained anything more to me, and so I just sort of put the information together, and it was years later when my 13-year-old cousin just randomly told me that my mother had been killed in a car accident. I can't even explain why he was compelled to say that, but he did. And, you know, I doubted him. I said, no, she was sick. That's not what happened. And then he called his mom, who was in the next room. Mom, I'll never forget him yelling for his mom to come in. And then, didn't Rachel's mom die in a car accident? I mean, it was just the most awkward moment. And his mother said, "Well, yeah, that's what happened." And so, you know, that's suddenly how I learned that my mother was killed in that way. And I had a lot of anger towards my family at that moment because I felt like I had been lied to. Even though, you know, as an adult now, I realize these were not malicious lies. You know, it's not like they got together and said, "We want to deceive Rachel, you know. We want to pretend." That's not what they meant to do, but that's what I felt had been done to me when I learned what had actually happened.
Mm-hmm. And I think back in those days, and even earlier than that, when I was a child, adults actually believed that, well, you know, you're just a young child, you won't even remember this, so we don't need to deal with it very much, because when you grow up and you're an adult, this will be so distant in the past, it won't really have an impact on you, which is the farthest thing from the truth.
Yeah, and it feels like such an injustice to the person who has been lost, you know what I mean? And I think about that now as a mother of three children. You know, I have one, my youngest daughter is only three, and when my other daughters were younger than five, I would often think about that, like, oh my God, you know, like all the living that we're doing together and all of the investment I'm making in their lives now. Imagine if something were to happen to me. And of course, that's a fear I live with all the time because of my experience, you know. But imagine if something would happen to me, would they remember me? Would they forget, you know? And as I grew older and realized there were so many unanswered questions about my mom, I was horrified about the fact that she was just gone. It's like she disappeared, and that wasn't right, you know? It wasn't fair. She had brought me into the world. I mean, she had spent 5 years with me. She loved me. I mean, I knew this, and yet I wasn't able to connect with her memory. I mean, I only had a handful of memories of her, you know, honestly. I mean, maybe 10 or so memories that I could bring to my mind, and I needed others in my life who knew her to fill out the story, you know, and tell me who she was and help me to stay connected to my mother of all people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it is bizarre to acknowledge that, yeah, I mean, people in the past, and maybe some people now, even think that the kids who are so young, let's just normalize things. And I think that's what the instinct was. You know, my family, just let's normalize things. Let's just keep things stable, you know, back to school, back to life, and not acknowledge this terrible trauma.
And also, in a way, by even keeping away memories of your mom, I think it seems like they were imagining that they would be lessening the pain that you would feel because you wouldn't remember her and wouldn't have to go through every day missing her. And so I remember in the video you mentioned your grandmother said, you can call me mommy now.
Yes.
And that even at that age, at the age of 5, that was offensive to hear.
Yes.
That.
Absolutely. I mean, I rejected that in a split second. I had a strength about me in that moment where that was not an option because I just knew what it meant. I mean, I just knew, you know, as I recognized the permanence of this news I had just received, I knew that by calling someone else mommy, it would be a complete, you know, undermining of who she had been in the world. And I mean, talk about like pretending, you know. Yeah, no, I had an immediate reaction to that and continue to, you know, think about that even now. It's true. I mean, people think they're going to lessen the pain, but what it did for me was make it worse. You know, mm-hmm. It really did, because I felt like I was yearning for her, and without anything to hold on to, you know, I had the bare minimum, you know, in terms of my own memories, but without connection to the people who were in my life and an opportunity to share, you know, the loss that we all had experienced. I mean, everyone was traumatized by this, but without an ability to connect with one another about it, I was alone in my grief. My father was alone in his grief. My grandmother was alone in her grief. You know, everyone was walking these parallel paths. And I feel like we could have supported one another and helped one another through the pain had we shared, you know, our grief.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, that impulse, whatever it was, to put things away, to pretend, to diminish, you know, in order to protect, it does the opposite. You know, it really does the opposite.
And so I think we underestimate children and their ability to understand death and dying, because you said at age 5, you knew instinctively that you would not see your mother again. You had enough understanding of what death is, enough of a sense of it that you could have had conversations with your father and your grandmother. You could have participated in that, and it would not have been over your head or outside of your understanding. Maybe, I mean, your understanding would have grown over time and over the years. But I think that we assume that children couldn't grasp death or what that means. And that also is not necessarily true, and probably never true. But
That's right. And I think something important to remember, too, is that whatever that child is or is not able to grasp at that age, you know, in my case it was 5, and another child's case it may be a little bit older, a little bit younger. The fact is that that child's grief will evolve with him or her. And if you don't start the conversation when it happens, it's hard to pick it up. It's hard to start it at any point in that child's life. And I remember a member of my family, in response to the TED Talk, actually, because, you know, this did open up conversations between me and family members, you know, just recently, because they heard me talk about this for the first time in many cases. And I remember one family member said, but you were just, you know, you were the next day, you were on the floor playing with your dolls, and, you know, we just assumed you were okay. And it's just, it's so interesting because, yes, I was on the floor playing with my dolls, but, you know, they certainly didn't have access to what was going on in my head. I mean, who knows, maybe I was role-playing something with those dolls around the loss, or maybe my brain was giving me a break from the shock, you know, I was distracting myself for a few minutes. But the fact is that over time, and as I grew up and started to, you know, confront more questions and feel the loss even more and feel more alone, I mean, that was my evolving grief, you know, and I maybe couldn't name it at the time. But because, you know, at five, family members chose not to engage me, that means they weren't engaging me at 7, 8, 10, 11, 14, 17. You know what I mean? It was just this perpetual, you know, silence. And so when is the right age? I mean, if a child loses someone at 11, is that the right age? Can you talk then, or 14 or 8? I mean, so I would really push people to realize that, you know, that this is one moment in time, but it's the beginning of a lifetime of grieving, really, especially when we're talking about the loss of a parent or some fundamental person, you know, some essential person, foundational person in that child's life. So, you know, maybe the conversation at five is different than it will be a year or two or three later, but at least it needs to start.
Mm-hmm. I know my husband's mother died when he was 12 years old, and there was much the same response in his family. No one talked about it. No one helped process the grief at all. And he described to me a million daggers of pain throughout his life, like every Mother's Day when they would make Mother's Day cards at school. Every time they'd have a mother-child day, you know, moms would come for a luncheon or for some program, and he didn't have a mother. And he said there wasn't one person that he could go to describe that pain, the pain of loss that he felt over and over and over again. Again, he also just grieved in silence all of those years and carried all of that pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's almost, it almost feels like it's a conspiracy of silence, as if everyone, including every other mother of every other child in the classroom, knew that his mother had died and knew that your mother had died, and all of your relatives, all of your teachers, everyone knew that, and not one person was courageous enough to actually bring it up or talk about it, or even just spend a moment with you and look into your eyes and want to know what are you feeling right now? What is it like to be you, and what are you going through?
Yeah, and I say that a lot about the importance of looking a child in the eyes, because it's dignified, you know what I mean? It's acknowledging their humanity. I mean, maybe they're smaller than everyone else, but they're human beings with complicated feelings, and that's so important. And the point you make about conspiracy, I mean, I think that's so true. You know, I started talking about how I felt when I discovered what had actually happened, and I did feel deceived, and I felt like, you know, that people had made these decisions and cheated me out of information and experience that I might have had, you know, knowing what had happened. And that made me angry and resentful. And so, you know, those are not pleasant feelings to have, you know, on top of the grief that you're wrestling with, you know, to begin with, a child who has lost a parent. I mean, there's a whole other dimension to that child's emotional life. And so on top of that, you know, to add these feelings of betrayal and anger, you know, that it doesn't help resolve anything, that's for sure. It just complicates it.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you experienced it as a child, if because you saw the adults in your life also going through grief, if that was a huge obstacle for you to talk about it or mention it or talk about your own feelings, because it was clear that everyone else was not doing so well at the time, and that you wouldn't add to their burdens either by bringing it up yourself.
No, truth. I mean, in fact, you mentioned your husband's experience on Mother's Days with kids making cards in their classrooms. I had a similar experience It was probably just a few years after my mom died where all the kids were given construction paper and markers, and, you know, it was time for everyone to make a Mother's Day card. And I remember looking around and, you know, seeing my friends start to draw rainbows and flower bouquets and whatever else it was. And I just thought, you know, what should I do? And I actually decided to write a card to my mom. And so I remember writing, "I miss you, Mommy," and drawing something. And then I decided as a gesture that I would give this card to my grandmother. And this was my father's mother, who really was so amazing and ultimately raised me, because my dad was so young when this happened and he was not emotionally equipped to raise a five-year-old on his own. And so I lived with my grandmother and she did everything for me. So she was my immediate caretaker and she was my grandmother. And so on Mother's Day, I gave her that card, and she felt it, and her reaction was to sob. You know, she dropped the card on the floor because I think she was so taken aback by it and moved by it, truthfully, I'm sure. And she just hid her head in her hands and sobbed. I mean, I saw her shoulders shaking, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I picked up the card and I threw it away. I mean, I felt like it had hurt her. And she didn't follow up with me, you know. She didn't follow up with me about what she experienced as a result of getting the card. I just went away. I went into my room. I closed the door. And that was that. And so even though as an adult I can see that she was incredibly moved by it, and I think, you know, she revisited her own loss, her pain, the tragedy of this, you know, child without a mother, making a card that says, "I miss you" on Mother's Day, all of that. You know, I can empathize and I understand what she was experiencing. But, you know, from the perspective of the kid, I felt like it communicated to me that there was no space for this conversation and that it would only hurt people. And so I chose not to say anything else and became complicit in the silence. However, because of who I am, and I suppose I was lucky to be born this way or whatever, you know, I am a person who is like, I process everything verbally out loud and writing. And so I couldn't help myself. I just had to get stuff out. And that meant for me that I turned to journaling, I turned to theater, I turned to, you know, art, whatever, to try to talk about this. And I looked outside of my immediate family for listeners, you know, and was very aggressive actually about putting my story out there. You know, you mentioned at the beginning and as part of my introduction that I have a master fine arts degree in nonfiction writing. And when I was at Columbia, all I wrote about was my mother's death. That is all I wrote about. I mean, I researched grief. I one thing after another. And my professors at one point said, "Anything else you can mine here?" I mean, like, you kind of like, but that was my therapy. It was very expensive therapy, by the way, because I'm still paying student loans. Very expensive therapy. But it's all I could do. It was like a compulsion, because when I was finally, you know, out of my house, away from my family, on my own, you know, this young adult in this creative space, which I sought out, you know, that's all I wanted to do. And I realize it's because it's what I needed. Now, I think not everyone is as lucky as I was, because not everyone is inclined to be as verbal as I am about things and can find that outlet. And that's, you know, it saved me, I think, because, you know, when I think about what happened to my dad, I know that he repressed so much. I just know he did. And that's what led him to self-destruct. You know, like, he was self-medicating. He was trying to numb himself and, like, get rid of the pain because he could not find an outlet for that. And it led to his death, his early death. I mean, he died in his mid-50s. He should have lived decades more. Mm-hmm. And he also, while he was living, did not live to the fullest, I believe, because he didn't allow himself to find another partner in his life. He had girlfriends here and there, but whenever they would talk about commitment and like lifetime partnership and building a family, he would run away. And so it's like he punished himself his whole life for what happened and felt like maybe he wasn't deserving of love or another family or another partner. I mean, I can't say exactly because he never really let me in, but this is what I believe and this is what I saw play out in his life. So, I mean, I feel like the ability to share grief and really talk about grief can be life-saving.
Mm-hmm. And I think grief is so ubiquitous when you look around it, around you. Every one of us have experienced it, or we will. It's just part of our life that we will lose the people that we love. And yet, as a society, we're doing such a bad job addressing grief and really dealing with it out front and in the open. And I saw a recent statistic that 50% of the patients who were surveyed in a mental health clinic waiting room, 50% of those people had unresolved grief issues that were at the basis of the mental health problem they were there to get help for. And
wow.
Yet the counselors never talked to them about the grief. They talked about the current mental health issue, but didn't address the grief. So even in our mental health system, we're doing a terrible job of
right.
embracing grief and really addressing it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. And you're right, because everyone will experience this at one time or another. It's so essential that we find ways to open up this conversation about what healthy grieving looks like. But I also know a lot of people resist the notion of saying what grief should look like, because people are different and they live their grief in different ways. So I don't mean to be at all prescriptive and say that you need to talk out loud or you need, but there needs to be, I don't know, how to find the balance between letting people grieve the way they feel they need to, but also really encouraging an open forum for discussion about this, or awareness about the fact that this is needs to be acknowledged and reckoned with,
Mm-hmm. And, Rachel, I mentioned before when we were chatting before we started the interview that to be fully transparent, my own story of grief is I don't have a record of handling grief very well myself, because after my dad committed suicide when I was 35, it took 20 years before my mother and my brother and I actually talked about his death. But I realized that during that 20 years, we were each grieving in silence, each on our own path. And as I look back on it, I guess the pain of that death and all the questions surrounding it and the guilt that each one of us felt was probably the biggest reason we couldn't go there. We just could
right.
not talk. And I stayed away. My family lives in a different state. I really stopped visiting. I rarely went there to even see them, because it was so painful to even be there, to be in my mom's house, to be around them, that I stayed away. And that is, I agree with you, that is tragic, because we missed 20 years of time when we might have helped one another. And in the end, the reason that I was carrying guilt, because I'm a doctor and I was taught to treat depression and I had helped suicidal patients, and yet my dad committed suicide. And in my mind, I imagined my mom and my brother blamed me for his death. And once, after 20 years, we finally talked, my mother said, "I assumed that you and your brother blamed me for your father's death." And my brother said the same thing. "I assumed
wow.
that you blamed me." And suddenly it was clear. Each one of us was carrying this incredible guilt. We were not blaming one another. We each were just imagining it in the midst of our own pain. And so, just like your story, I imagine how different things might have played out in our lives if we had been able to talk earlier instead of taking that many years. But for whatever reason, that's how long it took us to actually manage it.
Right. And that's another thing that I have tried to talk about more and emphasize while sharing the story, is that understand that my father and my grandmother in particular, I mean, these are the two, you know, family members I'm talking most about because I was closest to them. I know that they didn't do this, you know, intentionally, that they themselves were struggling with their own grief and shock and in pain and, you know, in denial, whatever that was. And so, you know, they were not making all of these decisions thinking about the implications for me. And I want to remember that, you know, they have their had their own grief to contend with. And so that's true. I mean, these are, generally speaking, really good people who are, you know, immersed in tragedy. And it's so hard. But I just, that's why I think these stories are so helpful. You know, when people hear about what happened with my family, and when people hear about the 20 years it took for you and your mom and brother to connect, I hope that if people find themselves in situations like this, that that will be a trigger for them, you know, to endure the pain. Like, you know, it's going to be hard, but to understand that on the other side, potentially, will be richer relationships with the living and resolved grief, you know, and questions with answers and that kind of thing. Because, you know, we all want to avoid pain, and it's just a push to get people to just take it up, you know, take it up and push through.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you so much. Sharing the stories, we're really trying to change this culture of silence around grief and open it up so that if all of us have had conversations and heard stories about the process of grief, of how grief affects other people, when it's our time to be in the midst of grief, we'll have more literacy about grief,
yeah,
if you want to say, and have more tools available to us for how we manage it and what we do with our own grief.
Absolutely.
Let's see. I wanted to mention that in my husband's case, it was really interesting. Just last month, we were visiting his family back in Minnesota, and his older brother brought out a cigar box full of letters that their mother had written to him. He was in college when their mother died. His mother had been writing him letters. She was sick with cancer, but had been writing to him from the hospital while he was in college. And he just found these letters. He'd completely forgotten that he
wow.
had them. And he brought them and showed a letter to my husband that mentioned it was at the time of my husband's 12th birthday. And she wrote his older brother a letter and said, she was in the hospital, and she said, did you make sure Larry got his birthday present? And for my husband, that was incredible. Even now, all these years later, just to know that right before his mom died, she remembered his birthday. And
right.
She worried about how his birthday celebration would go in his present. And that little touch of motherly love and mother's nurturing and caring was so important to him, even
right.
now, this many years later. It just completely opened up a new place inside of him that he's been hiding and, you know, tending to all these years, that allowed him to finally let go of another piece of that grief.
Wow, that's amazing. That really is an amazing story. What a gift.
Yeah, it totally was. And it made me remember, you were talking about the fact that the pictures of your mom were put away and how important it would have been for you all through childhood to have to reminisce and to have stories told to you about your mom and pictures shown to you of this is what mom was like, this is what she did, this is what she thought about, this is what she did, this was the kind of mom she was for you, this is how
right.
she cared for you and the special things she did for you. It would have been such an incredible gift for you to have.
Absolutely. I mean, any information like that would have made a huge difference. And I mean, I can say that over the years, as I asked more and more questions, you know, I did start to get answers. I think I started to break down some of the barriers that people had. And, you know, it began to insist in so many ways that this was important, you know, and that it wasn't okay for these silences. I mean, my grandmother and I had a really memorable conversation one night when, you know, I came home from college with a 20-page essay I'd written about all of the silence that had been in our family for years. And, you know, she read it and she told me her story, you know. She told me her experience of that night and explained to me why she had made decisions she'd made. She was even surprised by some of what I had experienced. She had no idea, you know. So, you know, there was, and then eventually she started to take things out of the garage. I mean, there were some boxes of some of my mom's old things and some pictures I'd never seen. So, you know, I can say slowly but surely I started to get some of those things filled in and did feel like they were these tremendous gifts that were given to me. I mean, unfortunately, with my dad, we never had a breakthrough, you know. Till the end, there were walls up and an inability for us to connect about this. And, you know, that's why I believe so strongly that the silence between us and the repressed grief that he lived with was a big part of why he died, you know. I really, really do. That breakthrough never happened.
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense to me that those of us who have the courage, and, you know, and you said you were born with this ability to be verbal and the strength to be verbal, those of us who do have that ability, we really do need to step up right now and tell these stories and speak the truth, just as you're doing through your blog and through the TEDx video, so that others can hear it and hear the message, and that it starts to permeate our society.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel a responsibility, and it's also healing, you know. I mean, I think the ability to talk about this, it is absolutely healing, especially after growing up in that silence. You know, I almost feel like every time I'm able to tell the story and connect with just one person about this and open up, you know, a conversation about this, it has the potential to change lives. I mean, I'll never forget, after I did the TEDx talk, there was a live audience there, and I got an email a week later from a colleague of mine who, you know, I'd only met a couple of times because we were involved in a program together, and she shared in that email that her husband had committed suicide years before when her twin sons were really small. And she told me that listening to that TED talk made her realize that she needed to talk to her sons about what had happened. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, for these two boys, I'm not sure when that conversation is going to happen or what it's going to sound like, but potentially for these two boys, that is a life-altering conversation that will be had with their mother, you know, and could potentially change the path that they're on as a family in terms of this grief. So, and that was just one person. And, you know, since the talk has come out, I've gotten lots of messages from people. And so I just know that telling these stories is important. And I feel like it's, you know, part of my mission now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we had a question typed in from Chad, who says, Rachel, you mentioned that no one, neither adult or child, took the time to ask you anything about how you felt after you lost your mom. What do you feel is the appropriate question to ask a child? If we ask, how are you feeling, I feel they would simply say, okay. Any thoughts on how to get them to talk more? That's a great question.
Yeah, no, it is a great question. I mean, I agree that maybe some of those more, you know, generic questions would get a generic answer. So, you know, I think maybe opening up with an acknowledgement of what has happened. You know, I mean, it's one thing to sit down with a kid who's gone through that and just say, how are you? But it's another thing to sit down with a kid and say, you know, I know what you've been through. I know this has happened. You know, I've been thinking about you. You know, do you want to talk about anything? And then, you know, more specific questions, I think. Are you, you know, asking them if they're sleeping okay? Are they eating okay? Or, you know, just the more concrete questions that you know, that will not require a very short answer. You know, if it's something that will draw out more information from people, I think that that's better.
Yeah, I was thinking too. It could
I apologize. My 3-year-old is in the background, and we are removing her to another room.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's like totally real life happening. I was thinking that it might help also with a child to say, you know, I've been feeling sad since your mommy died, and I'm wondering how you feel, to introduce the idea that it's okay to talk about those emotions and even to help connect with the child in that way. Like, this is what I feel. What are your feelings?
Right. I think that's true because, right, if you acknowledge your own feelings, it gives them permission to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, there are some really good books. Oh, now I probably can't remember the names of very many of them, but one I know is called Badger's Parting Gift, which is about, it's like a children's book about a little animal family, and one of the members of the family dies. But there are some really good books, and I think that's another way to reach children is to read a storybook together that talks about death. I think actually it would be good to read those books not just when the child is experiencing grief of their own, but to read those just to teach children about death and dying before they are experiencing grief.
That's right. I totally agree. Because, yeah, if you open up the conversation before things happen, it's part of, you know, a kid's consciousness and something that they can maybe confront more easily if things happen.
Yeah, when my kids were little, they had pet goldfish, and when the first goldfish died, which all of them died fairly quickly, I found they don't live very long, but my son's goldfish died, and the kids decided they wanted to have a funeral for the goldfish, so they created a funeral, they had songs that we sang, and we each gave a talk about the goldfish and what it meant to us. But it was really precious to see that they already understood the process, you know, that everything dies and that we need a way to say goodbye and to have a ritual and a way to express how much we loved this being that was part of our lives and is gone now. And so that meant a lot to me, that my kids were able to grasp death and then actually create their own ritual after the death of a pet. So I think that's a good thing to teach kids about when they do have pets, help them understand life and death.
Yeah, that's incredibly powerful. It is.
I see we have another person on the phone with a question from Las Vegas. I don't have a name here, but if you're from Las Vegas and you have a question, I'm unmuting your line right now.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Janie from Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Oh, New Mexico, okay.
Yes.
Hi there.
And I'd like to ask Rachel how you would describe where you are now with the loss of your mother.
Oh, that's thank you for the opportunity to talk a bit about that. You know, I think I'm in a good place just because I've been able to, you know, think so intentionally about it, and sharing these stories in particular has helped me a great deal. Also, being a mom is hugely healing for me. You know, I grew up longing for that mother-daughter thing, and I was, you know, I'm a mother to 3 girls, which is an incredible opportunity for me to sort of, you know, revisit all these questions I had growing up and try to answer them for myself, you know? I have often thought about the fact that, you know, I lost my mom at such a young age with just a couple handfuls of memories, and yet her presence in my life is profound, you know? I mean, it just speaks to me about the role that a mother or parent plays in the life of a child, you know? I mean, she, at this point, I turned 40 a few months ago, and so, you know, it's been 35 years without her, and yet, you know, I think about her all the time, and I look at my kids and wonder what she would have been like as a grandmother all the time. So, I mean, I definitely still feel the loss, and there are days when I wake up and it's more painful than other days, but I guess for me, I've found some reason to, I mean, to leverage what has happened to me in order to talk to others about it, and that makes me feel a little better. Well, and especially when you combine this with the, you know, my dad's death. I mean, he died in this tragic way, alone, and, you know, because of alcohol abuse, and you know, and our relationship was strained at the end because of his addiction and also his inability to really connect with me. So, I mean, that too is terribly tragic and linked to my mom's loss. So I just, you know, some days are harder than others, but I'm just really trying to reflect about this stuff in an intentional way to help me, you know, move forward.
So do you think dealing with your mother's death helped you in dealing with your father's?
Well, I think I was certainly better positioned to deal with his because I was so honest about my, you know, feelings about hers. And I think that I have been advocating for so many years for openness around death and loss, that once he died, it, you know, gave me the space with my immediate family, at least the family I've created, you know, to talk about what happened. And, you know, that's something I've done with my kids. Like, they know that my dad died because of drinking too much alcohol and that his body stopped working. And, you know, there were no pretend reasons why things had happened. I didn't use euphemisms to describe it. You know, I've talked openly with my husband, with, you know, my friends and closest, you know, confidants about how I feel, and that's helped me to grieve.
So that's kind of been like night and day from when your mother died for you and for your children now.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's part of my, it's very, very much on purpose. You know, I want to, you know, we all do that. There are things we experience as kids, and then we say, we don't want it this way when we're grown-ups. You know, we don't want our kids to go down that road. And so in the case of my own kids, I mean, some might argue that they know too much or, like, it's, you know, like, wow, you really want to talk to an 8-year-old about alcoholism? Yeah, you know, I do, because I think that they can handle it. And I think they, you know, within the context of our family discussions, that that it's important.
Yeah, they always know more than we think they do anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
But it's not often that people talk about that perspective that you gain from the other side of healing. So I appreciate your doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for being a part of the conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Well, Rachel, I just wanted to say I feel it's so important that we have voices like yours being heard now, and to emphasize to other people that, just like you have been a student of grief, but you haven't been but not in an intellectual sense of, you know, getting a degree in grief and bereavement counseling, but
right.
You're a student of grief by experiencing it in your own life and going through your own process. And that is extremely valuable. And we need everyone out there, because every one of us has our own grief story, and we need all of our stories to be told in any way possible, to be written, to be shared with others, talked about, recorded, you know, in whatever way people can share their stories. I think you're so right, Rachel, that the stories themselves are what will help our society evolve and break out of the silence.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm hoping, and I'm so happy to be a part of the work.
Well, I am too, and I can tell you, through this interview series, so many of the people I've met who are working in some way in end-of-life issues were influenced by their own grief by a loss, and their part of their grief process was to take on new work and to get involved in helping other people with death and dying. And so it's interesting that our grief really shapes us in some ways and really prepares us and then kind of pushes us toward this calling and this work that we end up doing. And I can see that in your case as well.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm eager to see where this goes. You know, I mean, obviously I'm juggling a job and my family, but I do feel a sense of mission with this, and it's something I'm really passionate about. So we shall see.
Well, thank you for listening to the calling and for listening to the push within you to put this out to the world. And I want to remind everyone again that your TEDx talk is fantastic. It's so beautifully written and beautifully presented. So it's your story, but the way that you tell it in the video it's very compelling and very beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And so anyone who hasn't seen it can find that just by going to YouTube and then searching, at least what I did, search for Rachel Stevenson, Against Grieving and Silence. Is that
right?
That's
right. That's right.
So watch the video, share it with people you know, send it around to all of your friends to watch that video. Then also Rachel's blog is deardeadmother.wordpress.com. So you can go there to read Rachel's writings. And do you have like a email list or anything people can sign up for?
Not at this point, but I would love it if people would like. I have a Facebook fan page, Rachel Marie Stevenson, and it would be great if people could like that page, and then they could stay connected to, you know, my writing and additional work. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I would encourage people to do that if you're on Facebook. So Rachel Marie Stevenson.
Okay. Correct.
That's great. So we know how to get in touch with you. And Rachel, are you doing public speaking? If anyone out there is, say, planning a conference or an event,
I would love to. I've done I've done a number of interviews. I did a podcast. I spoke at an event for a group in Long Island recently. So that's definitely something I'm willing to talk about. And also people can email me. I have an email address that I've created specifically for this work. It is R. Stevenson. And just to remind everyone, that's STEPHENSON.grieveoutloud@gmail.com. So that's rstevenson@grieveoutloud@gmail.com.
Okay, that's fantastic, because you're so articulate and so impassioned, and I think you would just be an incredible keynote speaker for an event to just open everyone, open their eyes and open their hearts to this subject of grief.
Yes, I would love it. That's part of my fantasy.
All right.
I'm able to, be on some sort of, make connections, real life in-person connections with people in that way, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for following that dream of yours, because you're making a big difference, and that's what we need. We need more people like you out there with the courage to share their stories. And I'm really grateful to you, Rachel, for joining me today and having this discussion.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity, Karen, and I hope that we stay connected.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Rachel Stevenson. We mentioned her TEDx video, which I will link to in the show notes as well, eolupodcast.com, episode number 140, if you're interested in seeing the TEDx video. And just a few takeaways from this interview. I found it really compelling to hear Rachel's story and to think of the pain of a young child losing a parent and how that pain is enhanced by the fact that none of the adults around her will talk to her about it, and that she didn't learn until much later how her mother actually died, that her mother died in a car accident. And so the feeling of betrayal that she had for all of those years, betrayal and guilt, that the adults in her life did not help her process her grief, didn't tell her the truth, didn't even talk to her or really talk to her about what had happened. And so it's such a compelling story that points out to us the importance of helping children in our lives deal with grief whenever it arises for them. And I think one of the points that came up that Rachel said, normalizing or minimizing the grief doesn't help. And that oftentimes we mistakenly think if we just don't make a big deal about it, it will never be a big issue. The child will grow up, they won't even remember it, it will go away. And Rachel's here to say that's not true at all. In fact, the pain is carried deeply within and grows over time because there are so many different ways that child has to deal with not having a parent in their lives, and oftentimes in ways that adults around them may not even be seeing or recognizing. And so we talked about the fact that it's as if the adults in Rachel's life participated in a conspiracy of silence, as if they chose together to not talk to her about it. And that included her father, her grandparents, teachers at school, parents of her friends, aunts and uncles, all the adults in her life who never had this conversation with her and really deprived her of working through her grief at a younger age. And we also talked about the fact that a child's grief evolves over time, and so it changes because we're more and more ready to deal with deeper layers of that grief as we get older and more mature, and yet it's still significant even at a very early age and still should be addressed at whatever level the child is able to handle those grief feelings. And I thought that was very significant. And then Rachel mentioned that the grief has added to it layers of betrayal and anger, which makes it even bigger to manage when you look back at it as an adult. During this interview, you will have heard a couple of questions that got answered because we recorded this live and had an audience there that asked a couple questions. So you will have heard that, which I found really interesting as well. So I think this interview was a great reminder for all of us that it's very important to address grief with our children. And one thing I've always advocated is don't wait until there's a significant death in the family to talk about grief, but use all of the little deaths that occur around us in life. You know, when you find a dead bug on the floor in the house, it's a chance to talk about death. If there's a dead bird in your yard, even when the leaves are falling off the trees in autumn, you can talk about the cycle of life and death. And then if you own a pet and your pet, when it's time for your pet to die, that's a perfect way to help your child acknowledge that death and experience the grief that comes from it. So I wanted to remind you that there are lots of ways to address grief before your child has to deal with the extreme grief of losing a close loved one. And so it's not too early to start that, and also to start reading some books about grief to help children adjust to it. With that being said, remember to tune in every Monday for a new episode. So I'll be back again next week. And go to patreon.com/EOLU if you'd like to become a supporter. And also, if you enjoy this content, I'd love to have you leave a review on iTunes, which will help the podcast be shown to more people when they're searching for content like this on iTunes. And you can go to the show notes. I have a link there that tells you how to leave a review. Otherwise, if you're using the iTunes podcast app on your smartphone, it usually has a box within it where you can leave a review if you've subscribed to the podcast. So anyway, thank you. Thanks for all of those of you who've already left reviews. I really appreciate it. So another reminder, I'm going to be playing Gia's healing chant called Evocation as the outro today. So I hope you enjoy listening to that. And until the next time we're together, remember to face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings your way, and love your life. Bye-bye.
In peace.